another 666 ABC Canberra podcast. To subscribe to any of our podcasts, go to abc.net.au/Canberra.
Rare Collections.
On ABC Local Radio, welcome to Rare Collections. I'm Geordie Kilby.
I'm David Kilby.
And Rare Collections is a podcast that David and I do on a fortnightly basis. We've been doing it for about 12 months. We look at some of the stories of Australian pop music that are perhaps less told or never told.
That's right. Some of the more obscure parts of it, and some of the more popular ones too. We sort of managed to mix them up a little.
It should be said we're both tragic record collectors. Most family outings, most holidays are spent digging around in secondhand stores looking for obscure recordings. We really can't help ourselves, and it's a great way of sharing some of the more interesting finds with you. So for today, it's a bit relaxed. Hopefully it's a nice day where you are. We're going to trawl back through some of the some extras. This, if you like, this would be the box set of
the mega mix,
the 12-inch of Rare Collections for 2011. As I say, every fortnight we pick a theme. We dip into that. Over the year, we've looked at what was the first rock and roll record recorded in Australia, incredible significance of kangaroos in popular music,
Australiana,
Australian humour and satire,
country towns,
a whole range of different subjects. Some of them quite academic, some of them quite silly in
academic.
Many ways.
What?
But and in each instance, someone's got in touch and said, "Oh, you really should have played this," or "Did you think about that?" We're going to share some of the additions to some of the sessions that we've run for Recollections over the last 12 months or so. And the very first one we're going to dip into is one that was suggested as an add-on to an episode we did on Australiana, songs that really are quintessentially Australian. Mm-hmm. And one song that is quintessentially Australian, perhaps more Australian than almost any other, is The Pub With No Beer. Another that's right up there alongside The Pub With No Beer would have to be the song "I've Been Everywhere," which of course was written by Jeff Mack but made famous by
Lucky Star.
And Jeff Mack is an interesting character. He wrote the song. He had been around for a very long time, spent many, 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 many years travelling, from Europe out to Australia in the first part. I think he rode a motorcycle across. Spent a long time working in shows in outback Australia, wrote this song, and had apparently been sitting on "I've Been Everywhere" for about 15 years before Lucky Star picked it up and recorded his version.
And since then, there's been, 131, I think at last count, different versions from all around the world. Just fascinating to look at them.
And an EP was released at one point that featured an Australian version, also featured a British version, an American version.
New Zealand.
And a New Zealand version. Apparently, at one point, the New Zealand version was still missing. They had the lyrics for the English, Australian, and American one, but they still hadn't got the New Zealand one out of Jeff Mack. And one day in the festival offices, a telegram arrived. They reckoned it was the longest telegram they'd ever seen. And it had the lyrics for the New Zealand version, so they were able to rush it into the studio, have Lucky Star record it, and get the EP out there. So Jeff Mack is no stranger to writing songs in strange places and also to making them work.
And he called himself, actually on the 45 of this one we're about to look at, George, he called himself Jeff Tangletongue.
Mac.
Mac.
And the Machinations, I think, are the Mechanics, sorry, are the backing band. But that's not the song we're going to play. A little bit of background for you. The song we're going to play is a song of his called "I've Had Everything," which, as you could probably guess, plays on the "I've Been Everywhere," but works it slightly differently. And it's interesting, too, where he came to write this song. This is Jeff Mack.
I got the idea, but I was booked to about 90, I think it was 1966. I got a job up at Longreach, and I think it was the Criterion Hotel up there, and for a week. And I had a nurse's dictionary. I was studying all these diseases, seeing what rhymed. And I put that in my bag, but I didn't have anything to write on in the plane. But I started to write out on a one of those convenient bags that they put in the back of the seat in front of her, in case you feel a bit bilious. And I wrote the words on one of those, on both sides of it. And when I got there, I did it that night. I put the bag over the microphone, because I had another microphone on my guitar, and I read it, and having written it out on the plane coming up. So that was the first time I did it.
It's quite an image, isn't it?
And a most appropriate thing to write it on, too.
Absolutely. It's a fantastic story. Jeff said that he'd been accused of writing many sick songs over the year, but this one is, I guess, the one that really takes the cake.
Because I've had everything, Doc. I've had everything, Doc. I've had the blooming lot, Doc. I'm always on the cut, Doc. Just tell me what I've got, Doc. I've had everything. I've had meningitis, hepatitis, tonsillitis, bulmonism, arthritis, fibrositis, dermatitis, rheumatism, neurosis, halitosis, thrombosis, epilepsy, silicosis, anna, athelitis, catalepsy, capitation, dislocation, constipation, pyorrhea, bronchorrhea, lancorrhea, galactorrhea. I'm always queer. I've had everything, Doc.
If you're wondering why he says Jeff Tangletongue back on the label, you wouldn't be too...
Wonder no longer.
No, absolutely not.
That's very clever, I think. That's almost, if not cleverer, than I've been everywhere.
It's a great idea. And look, I've heard the Hilltop Hoods wrap their tongues around some pretty tricky rhymes in my time and some great Australian hip-hop acts, but I reckon that's got to be a candidate for a great early rap record.
And Rita Schneider did a version too, didn't she, of that?
She did, and interestingly, when we spoke to Jeff Mack, he said that his favourite version was Rita Schneider's.
Oh, really?
And Rita Schneider not only cut her own version of that, but she also did versions of where she listed all the medicines she'd taken. She really played around with the idea quite a bit and had a lot of fun with it. You're listening to Recollections, David and Geordie Kilby on your radio, ABC Local Radio, and we're trawling through some interesting stories from the back pages of Australian pop music.
Another track we travelled down was comedy, spoken word comedy, if you like, and as part of that, we had a look at the great Australian tradition of yarning. And years ago in the, I think it was the early 60s, I'm pretty sure it was ABC, there was a little segment, I fancy it was just before the news, I'm sure someone will pick us up on this, they had the yarns of Billy Bawker. And it was Frank Hardy sort of telling, well, Australian stories, just yarning, like this.
Then, of course, about cricket. The world's worst cricket umpire came from Chinkapook. And Chinkapook won the local premiership 10 years in succession on account he made a lot of bad decisions all their way. Anyway, Chinkapook is playing off for the 11th year, and the other team decides to ring in Ray Linwall, who just happens to be on holidays in the district. Well, Chinkapook bats first. Linwall opens the bowling. The first ball outside the off stump, and the batsman snicks it. Caught at first slip. How's that, says Linwall. Not out, says the world's worst umpire. Next ball is straight on the middle stump and wraps the batsman on the pads. How's that, says Linwell. Not out, says the world's worst umpire. So Ray Linwell goes back and he bowls a yorker straight under the bat. The middle stump breaks into three pieces. The off stump goes over the sideboard and the leg stump into the grandstand. And the world's worst umpire says to Linwell, bad luck, mate. You're nearly at him that time.
And the whole album that was actually produced by Joe Halford, who we talked to when we did the look at the surfing scene in Australia. So Frank, of course, most famous as the author of Power Without Glory and Unlucky Australians. And on the record, he first of all tells you all these yarns are true, and he does things like The Greatest Grog Gargler, Tomo's Two Up, The Great Australian Larrikin, and The World's Worst Urger, if you're a bit of an idea. It's not bad. But you never included an H, did you, back then?
Yeah, from one famous Australian then, let's move on to another. And John Farnham, you know, he is a massively famous Australian pop star. He probably cut the version of Help that was closest to the one that John Lennon could hear in his head when he wrote the song. He was king of pop, I think, 5 years in a row. His album You're the Voice was the first album to sell 1 million copies in Australia alone. Many, many landmarks in John Farnham's long career, but his first record for many, I imagine, of you listening would say was Sadie the Cleaning Lady, the first many of us heard of him.
Can I tell you a quick story here, George? We when we were travelling through America, we went down to track down where James Brown came from, Augusta, Georgia, where he hung out, and we struck it on a early in the morning, and we saw the statue that's there in the main drag through and several other things that were James Brown related. And as my wont, I went into a second-hand shop. You wouldn't want to know it. There we are in the heart. This is down south, Augusta, Georgia. And the top record in a little pile of 45s that were there was Sadie the Cleaning Lady by John Farnham. I couldn't, or John E. Farnham, I should say. I just couldn't believe it. So, but what was, that was his first big record, but it wasn't his first record, Geordie, was it?
No, well, he was in a high school band called the Mavericks at one point, and when he left high school, he joined another band called Sounds...
Strings Unlimited.
Now, I do this every time. There, of course, was a Sounds Unlimited, but the band was Strings Unlimited. Now, Strings Unlimited, they were... they played the hits of the day, they played the Beatles and a lot of covers. They played a regular gig at the Hampton Hotel in Port Phillip Bay. One day, though, while they were doing a gig at Kahuna, a strange guy walks up. The classic, this is the classic scenario, says to Johnny, "I can make you a star." Gives him his phone number, they exchange numbers. And in this case, a week or so later, he gets a call from Daryl Samble, who goes on to manage John Farnham for a good best part of a decade, and take him from lead singer of Strings Unlimited to national and international fame. But the first stop on that trip was a little EP called Susan Jones.
Yes, Ants at A&A were having a big promotion, and it was built around one of the air hostesses, and it was Susan Jones. And her face was everywhere on billboards. And the idea was to put her thoughts into song. And Pete Best, the famous Australian composer, was given the task of coming up with the song. And an EP came out, Susan Jones, Rock 5, vocals, then you had Susan Jones Rock 5 instrumental, then you had Susan Jones brass and the Susan Jones Baroque Quintet made up the EP, but the rock vocals were done by none other than John Farnham. So this is the first released record by a young Johnny Farnham.
Susan Jones, if you can hear, please fly home here today. Planning to stay, let me hear you say you care for me all the way, Susan Jones.
Oh, Susan sounds like exactly the kind of person I'd like to have looking after me on a flight somewhere. That's Susan Jones by the Susan Jones Rock 5, isn't it?
But, yes, it is.
Featuring the very first appearance on record of Johnny Farnham. And Susan Jones, so you mentioned her faces were up, posters of her face were up all over the place. This is before my time. But who was Susan Jones? Is she still around? I mean, who was she?
Well, can I quote from the back of the EP, George? Susan Jones, she's that swinging doll who's been fronting the Ants at A&A ads and making it on the front page lately. She's a real flyer. Why not make warm music for her sake, we thought. A bird like Susan, who can handle practically any up-in-the-air scene that happens, certainly deserves some sweet and crazy sound. So we called in Pete Best. He's a high flyer himself, being always up in the clouds. Turn on your hearing gear then and make it with Susan's theme. It's a gas.
And indeed it was. I wonder what Susan Jones is doing now.
I wonder.
This is ABC Local Radio. David and Geordie Kilby with you. We do a program called Rare Collections. This is the Rare Collections box set, adding on to some of the many podcasts we've covered looking at Australian popular music over the last 12 months or so. I should say, if you are interested, if you throw Rare Collections and ABC Radio into your favourite search engine, you're bound to find the archive of all of the podcasts that we've done in the last 12 months or so. I'm sure there's pretty much something there for everybody.
Like that one, that was in addition to the ads that we did, George, Aussie bands that did ads.
That's right, like the Twilights did an EP for bowling, trying to get you to go bowling at one point.
Right, so the Masters Apprentices sang about a Cortina, wasn't it?
That's right. All right, look, the next band we're going to take a look at are the Johnny Rocco Band, an Australian funk band. And at one point during the year, we looked at great Australian funk and disco records. There are more than you might think. It wasn't really something that took off in Australia in the same way that it has in places like Europe and the UK and, of course, the United States, which is the home of the funk, James Brown, as we were talking about before. But the Johnny Rocco Band are probably one of the best, or released probably one of the finest Australian funk records in 1975. A beautiful record with a great cover that sort of references, I'm guessing, the inspiration for the name of the band. Of course, there was a character in the film Key Largo, played by Edward G. Robinson, named Johnny Rocco. And there are a couple of very gangster-looking characters.
It's a very Bonnie and Clyde, actually, isn't it?
Yes, adorning the cover of the Rocco band album. I've had this album for many, many years. It came out in the same year as a couple of other interesting Australian funk releases. One was certainly in a period that had a range of great Australian funk records come out. A band called Stylus were also recording a lot of funk music at around this time. There was also Sky High who released an album of funk around this time as well, and of course Renee Gaia was just about to cut her very first album, which also had some fine Australian funk on it. And a link between Renee Gaia, in fact there are a couple within the Johnny Rocco band. The first is Mark Punch, who was one of the guitarists on the record and who co-wrote the song Heading in the Right Direction, which was one of the first big hits that came off of the first Renee Gaia album. He was in this band and actually left just before they recorded this album. He still appears on the album, but left to go to Melbourne and record with Renee Gaia. So there's a link there. But also the leader of the band, if you like, Russell Dunlop, the drummer, had played in a band called Mother Earth with Renee Gaia just a few years earlier. He was also in groups like Aesop's Fables. He played the drums in that. It was a very in-demand session drummer for quite a period of time. He was also one half of the Monitors, who had that song Singing in the 80s. Mm, mm. And he produced a range of big Australian songs as well, Words Are Not Enough for John English, and also Winter in America for Doug Ashdown. He was one of the producers on that. So he was into all sorts of stuff, but in his spare time, he was into playing this kind of funk music. This is the opening track from the album. It's called Good Times. It's a cover of a Rare Earth song. They do it very, very well. From their self-titled 1975 album, the Johnny Rocco Band, or the album is called Rocco, but the Johnny Rocco Band there, featuring Russell Dunlop, who I mentioned, some fantastic guitar on there from Mark Punch. And another interesting character who I didn't mention beforehand is Tim Partridge, who's the bass player on that, but he's been the long-time collaborator with Kevin Borich in the Kevin Borich Express. If you've ever seen them play anywhere, there's a good chance Tim Partridge was on bass.
Back in the early 70s, George, the idea was to, because the coastal line was being a little crowded, too many people in Sydney, too many people in Melbourne. The idea was to decentralise, and one of the towns that that they were looking at, the government, and certainly did something about, was Albury-Wodonga. And for a time there, Albury-Wodonga was the fastest growing city outside Sydney and Melbourne.
Wow.
And a lot of effort and planning was put into it, and it paid off. But in order to promote the idea, I suppose the Albury-Wodonga Development Corporation decided to get a song written about Albury-Wodonga, and they got Mick Layton, who I think when Mick, it's funny how they all crop up in different bands and so on. We've certainly found that. Mick Layton was with the Southern Contemporary Rock Assembly.
Okay.
Worked with Leon Isaacson too, I think, with a chance maybe. In any case, he doing the vocals on this and writing it was Peter Brandon and Peter Flanagan. And Peter Flanagan, I'm pretty sure, would be the Peter Flanagan from the Flanagans and also the Fawns, one of those early Australian backing groups and also a vocal group in its own right.
Okay.
Anyway, The Growing Place is the song that they wrote, a fairly big production number, which, well, gives a fairly idyllic view of Albury-Wodonga, but a great chorus in the middle third. Have a listen.
Albury-Wodonga, Australia's growing place. It's Albury-Wodonga, it's the place that's going places. There's a feeling in the air, and it's growing stronger in Albury-Wodonga.
The growing place. That's The Growing Place, the Albury-Wodonga song. And look, at a fairly lavish production there, not only vocally, but also the presentation here. Not for sale, at least the copy I've got's not for sale. But it comes in a gatefold 45 sleeve, Geordie. And the chorus there, which is particularly attractive, comes from the Alfred Street Chorale. It was recorded at Tin Pan Alley in Sydney at the Jingle Jungle. A neat name. There we go.
You listen.
And, sorry, we had a look at place names, didn't we, as one of the paths on our rare collections.
We did, actually, and someone from the Film and Sound Archive got in touch after hearing that program and mentioned that I think they had upwards of 300, maybe close to 400 songs that they could easily sort of see on their database there that referenced an Australian place name, so a town or a town or a city.
Sadly, very few of them ever became hits, George.
That's right, some of them even for villages, hamlets, and smaller affairs. But many, though, didn't quite get the budget that that they got for that song. So, you're listening to Rare Collections. David and Geordie Kilby, we present a podcast which happens every fortnight. We look at some of the more obscure corners of the world of the Australian pop scene from decades past. If you're interested in... If you're wondering, too, why it's such an eclectic playlist, if you just kind of tuned in and are thinking, geez, how do we get from Aubrey Wodonga to Johnny Farnham's first record to Australian funk? It's an odd playlist, agreed. We pick a different theme every fortnight and we explore that theme. And today is the box set, if you like, where we're adding on some of the tracks that could have fit into some of the themes that we covered over the last 12 months or so.
And the first theme I think we tackled, Geordie, was what was the first Australian rock and roll record? And we're looking in particular at, well, 78s or 45s at that particular stage. And we tossed up a few that we thought were pretty good candidates. One area we didn't look at, though, Geordie, was the first rock and roll LP. And we'd like to sort of present that today for your consideration. And we think it's one that came out by the Henry Borse All-Stars that came out of Melbourne in 1958. It's certainly the first Australian rock and roll LP with a coloured cover.
It's a fantastic cover.
Yeah, it's a terrific cover. And not a bad record either. You get your money's worth. There are 43 rock and roll songs on it. And another thing that it highlights is somebody who's often overlooked, I think, as far as groundbreaking singers are concerned in Australia. Who was the first real rock and roll female singer? And certainly a candidate would be Beverly Dick, who was guest star on this album. Henry Borse invited her to sing on the album, along with Peter McLean, who did the male vocals on it, with the All-Stars, Henry Borse All-Stars, doing backup. And she contributes a few songs on it, and she does them particularly well. The band itself is obviously modelled itself on Bill Haley. They do quite a lot of Bill Haley songs and Freddie Bell and the Bell Boys songs. But there's it's quite an esoteric mix on the... There are songs on there, and Beverly Dick sang songs that were not well known at the time, Geordie.
Absolutely. I mean, it's interesting. At the top of the album, it says, over 40 rock classics. And that's a phrase that has been used a lot, I would suggest, over the last 60-odd years. This is probably one of the very first times you'd find a phrase like that being used. And it's amazing how many of the songs on there are still rock classics. You've got all your Chuck Berry songs. You've got all your Little Richard songs, all your Bill Haley tunes. Elvis Presley. They picked pretty well. And look, let's let you have a listen to a little bit of... Beverly Dick, so you can hear what we're talking about with the Henry Borse All-Stars.
There we are. That's from Rock and Roll Party. The Planet recording from 1958, Henry Borse and the All-Stars with guest star Beverly Dick, one of the pioneers of female Australian rock and roll singers, and Peter McLean. And when I was talking to Ian Allen, who is still playing with the All-Stars, who married Beverly Dick, Ian was saying that Beverly used to get, she had a friend who would bring out the records, like a lot of DJs did at that time, Geordie, including Stan Rofe. He used to get some of the Qantas people to bring him out records. But Beverly also had a friend who'd bring out records, and she was into Janis Martin, one of the great American female rock and roll singers, long before anybody else was in it. And I noticed on the back of the record too, Geordie, that the gowns were supplied by Saba. Not often you get that on the back, that information, that detail on the back of albums. It's a beauty.
And Henry Borse too, he played in a bunch of other bands as well, the Thunderbirds, I think, as well in Melbourne. But was he famously attacked by a shark?
Yes, he was, Geordie, a victim of a shark attack.
Okay.
Another story about that. We haven't got time to tell right now. But Beverly itself was in the Trailblazers, sort of a country verged on rock and roll at times, and she was with the Planets and then the vocal group the Planetones.
This is Recollections, David and Geordie Kilby on ABC Local Radio. It's New Year's Day, and hoping that some of this music is prepping your day up for you a little bit. We're going to move on now to a band called Trio Franco and an album which I deeply love called Living It Up at the Copper Grill.
Great cover.
It has got an incredible cover, and whilst the gowns on the cover of the Rock and Roll Party album were supplied by Saba, there are not a lot of gowns to be seen on the cover of the Trio Franco album, it has to be said.
A lot of cozzies.
And that's because the band were photographed, or just happened to be, they played a regular gig at the Park Royal in Royal Parade in Melbourne. They had a regular gig there during the 1960s. And around the time that they recorded this album, 1966, they were lucky enough to be there while the Miss competition was being run. And so it was a simple thing for them to shoot the cover of the record using all of the contestants. So Miss Argentina's there, Miss Canada's there, Miss California's there. The whole host and the band couched very nicely in the middle, surrounded by all of the Miss entrants. I spent a little bit of time trying to track down some of the members of this band, and this is something that's been, I guess, a bit of an interest of ours for a while, but there's a small section in our collection that highlights bands who were playing at places. So, and we did a session on this a little earlier.
At hotels and clubs.
Yeah, the house bands,
yes.
If you like. So these guys were obviously the house band at the Copper Grill. They're and as I said, at the Park Royal. I tracked down Franco Cambereri, who was the keyboard player and the accordion player in the band, and I had a really good conversation with his wife Lucy, and she was telling me a little bit more about this record. They actually met around the time that this record came out, so it's something that that I think sits in their lounge room. It's up there on the bookshelf, and I said, you know, it is a great cover, and it's one that you should definitely have on display. But they Franco's an interesting guy. Well, there are two Francos: Franco Sofino, Franco Cambereri, who I mentioned, and Tony Modolo. So Tony was the drummer, Franco Sofino was the lead vocalist and guitarist, and Franco Cambereri the accordion and keys. They used to play at the Park Royal. Often they'd peel off after having done a night's work there and play at some of the nightclubs in Melbourne. You might have seen them at Triarca's or Robin Hood in Melbourne during the mid-60s. They'd often be out there playing until 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. The interesting thing about the Park Royal, though, was that they had a very international clientele. Travellers, business travellers coming from all over. And so the band actively sought to have songs from all around the world, so that no matter who was there looking for a song to be played whilst they were having having a meal or having a dance, that they'd have something for them. So there's a lot of South American material on this, but there's also a lot of European material. And then there's a mix of sort of top of the pop, so that they do Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini. And it's sitting there right beside Vieni Mia Bella or L'Amore. So it's a really eclectic mix of tunes. But Franco Cambereri, off the back of this, the Trio Franco split up in the early 70s, and he has subsequently done, I think, about 13 CDs worth of mostly instrumental material on the accordion, and has been recognised. He's got songs in the National Library in Italy. He's also got recordings in the National Library here in Australia. A really, really interesting musical story, and yet one that's not, you know, on the front pages of most music magazines. But look, here's a track from Trio Franco live at the Copper Grill. This is L'Amore. More Trio Franco, and if that's whet your appetite, throw Recollections and ABC Radio into your search engine and check out the Austral Lounge session that we did a little earlier. There's more where that came from.
Are the others in the group still around, George?
Yeah, look, speaking to Lucy, she mentioned that Tony, the drummer, he went into hairdressing after the band finished up and still cuts her hair today. And Franco, the other guitarist, they're all still really good friends. So interesting band, really interesting story. Interesting bit of Australian history, a lot of migrant families who came to Australia in the 40s and primarily in the 50s, who brought a lot of really international flavour, both with food and also with music to Australia.
Another person who brought international flavour Geordie was Sven Liebeck, and we had a long look at Sven Liebeck because he's a major figure in early Australian popular music, isn't he, from the 50s right through. And I came across in our collection an M7 recording of Sven Liebeck doing Summer of 42. And so we asked Sven about it, and he said, well, he recorded he was a great fan of Michel Legrand, and he was a great fan of Henry Mancini and also
John Barry.
Yeah, that's right. But he always wanted to record Summer of 42, the Michel Legrand song. And he did that, but he also cut classical album for M7. And he was also interested in giving, sort of updating, if you like, some classical sounds. And there was a bloke in Sydney who'd made his own synthesizer, and Sven was interested in incorporating that synthesizer sound into the classical sound. And so there's an element of this in Summer of 42. And I have to say, on the flip side, George, I don't know if we've got time to play a bit of it, but Sven renames himself Van Ludwig, and he does a great version of Moonlight Sonata. But first up, this is Summer of 42.
Sven Liebeck and his Summer of 42. As David mentioned, a bit of Van Ludwig on the other side doing Moonlight Sonata. But this is Recollections. David and Geordie Kilby with you. We've got just time for one more story from the Recollections box set. And this one came from a session that we ran on DJs who'd cut records. So we played some John Laws, who's made many records over the years. We played some Ron Sparks, who's also cut some records.
Ken Sparks
as well. Several Sparks who've made records. But someone, Lynn Nuttall, got in touch with us afterwards and mentioned there was one that we'd missed.
Yes, indeed. And that was Barry Ferber. So we asked Lynn, who'd done a blog on him, who was Barry Ferber?
Well, Barry Ferber was a disc jockey at 3DB in Melbourne. In fact, he was probably the disc jockey at 3DB at that stage. He joined them in 62. And he had an afternoon record show called Music Goes Ferber, which is a kind of a snappy title, really. There were a lot of albums around at that time. Spectacular Brass Goes Cha-Cha and that sort of thing. He didn't really fit the mould of the slick American disc jockey that some of his competitors were following, but he called himself the Mellow Fellow, and he had a lot of wit, I think. His programs were a lot of fun, and he used to send things up gently. He played all the latest records, and he was one of the first to really get into the Beatles, I think, back right then. This is, 63, 64. He had a panel operator. He would play the records and look after the technical side of the broadcast. It wasn't uncommon then for disc jockeys to joke around with their panel operator and maybe give him a nickname.
Yep.
And Barry Ferber called his panel operator the Bearded Beetle. And he ended up writing a song called The Bearded Beetle, which he recorded as The Beetle Bashes. That was the name of the artist on the record.
Right.
And it was spelt with two E's. So Ferber sings on this, the disc jockey himself, and you hear the bearded beetle talking every now and then and says in a sort of a British accent a little bit of something in my own peculiar way.
Yes.
So that's the bearded beetle. One of the reasons I blogged about it was I was a big fan of Barry Ferber at the time. I was 13 or 14. And he used to be on every afternoon after school, really, and on Sunday mornings. And I wondered who the bearded beetle was. And sure enough, as soon as you blog about some obscurity like this, somebody eventually emails. And I heard from a few people, including the bearded beetle's son.
Really?
And it turns out the bearded beetle's name was Dave Dexter. He became a disc jockey himself on Radio Hauraki in New Zealand. He died young in a car accident, but they recorded a second Beetle Bashes single, which was called Don't Make Love in the Cornfields, which had nothing to do with the Beatles this time. And on that occasion, it was written by Dave Dexter with his wife, Giselle, and Barry Ferber, and they recorded that with a band called The Hearsemen. So the The Bearded Beetle came out in 64 and Don't Make Love in the Cornfields, 65.
Did the Bearded Beetle sell well?
I don't think so. No. Perhaps it didn't get enough airplay on the other stations. and it was part of a genre that appeared at the height of Beatlemania, where there were a lot of silly Beatles records. So it really fitted into that genre. But I don't think it went anywhere on the charts. It doesn't appear on the published charts that we've got now, anyway.
Well, I don't think I'll be a paddle beater for life. Gonna find me a lady, but make her my wife. And we'll have kids by the dozen, it's true. Then all together we can sing the song to you. Oh, we are bearded beetles and we're paddle beaters too. And we play all the records just for you. So don't be too surprised if you want to hear us say a little bit of something in our own peculiar way. How, oh, Daddy's a disc jockey. What does your daddy do?
Well, mine presents Rare Collections with the David and Geordie Kilby. That's the end of this session. I hope you've had fun trawling through some of the Rare Collections box set with us today.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to this 666 ABC Canberra podcast. To subscribe to this or any of our podcasts, go to abc.net.au/Canberra.